You have questions about the 2020 census, and we have answers. Let's go to caller number one.
Well, what is it?
Good question. It's a simple questionnaire that counts everyone living at your address on April 1st. Next caller?
So why should I take it?
Because it guides how billions in funding gets used each year for things like clinics, fire stations, public transit, and so much more. Caller three, go ahead.
What's it have to do with representation?
Well, your state's population determines the number of seats it has in the U.S. House of Representatives for the next 10 years. Next?
How do you take it?
Just look for an invitation in the mail starting March 2020, then complete it online, by phone, or by mail. Let's go to our final caller.
Is my information safe?
Yes, it can't be shared with anyone. It's the law. Thanks for joining us, and don't forget to shape your future. Start here. Learn more at 2020census.gov.
And you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP 103.3 FM in Northampton, or Florence. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. It is Tuesday, March 31st, 2020. 302 says the studio clock. Thanks for tuning in today. Oh, that census PSA reminded me. I was hauling some recycling earlier this week, trash and recycling, and I saw a census flyer come through, and I thought, well, this virus and stuff, should you wait till you die to see whether or not you need to fill out the census? Well, we'll see. So for today's show, I have a little bit of talking to do, and I have some voices other than my own to play. I got a few little interviews from 6 feet away this week. I have an interview with Aya. I forgot her house name, her last name. Just talking about, you know, how the shutdowns from the consequences of the virus situation, how those things have affected her in her life. Paige Bridgens has a little clip, James Lowenthal, and then a little update from Alex Jarrett, 5th Ward City Councilor, about what's going on in his neighborhood city stuff. Oh, stories. All right, so I was earlier today, so I haul trash and recycling compost for Pedal People by bike and trailer. I was doing my route today, and I pulled into the transfer center. Well, yesterday when I was doing my route at when I pulled into the Locust Street Transfer Center, the police chief, Jody Casper, and the head of the DPW, Donna Scalia, sorry about that last name, they were having this discussion in the parking area where people pull in and trying to, you know, pointing here and pointing there and looking at this and looking at that. Well, so today when I pulled in with my load, the parking area, which, see, usually cars park, motorists park their cars sort of in a line, and then the closest spots, Pedal People just sort of pulls up close to the different places where we deposit things, like the cans and bottles or the scrap metal or the paper or the compost or the trash, whatever. We are usually granted pretty close access, which is really nice. We're a bit smaller than cars do usually, depending on how big our mound of trash is. Anyway, well, it's because, like, when we unload the trailer, we're usually schlepping like 300 or 400 pounds worth of stuff. So when I pulled into the transfer center today, there were orange cones directing different lanes of traffic. There was a sign that said, no more than 5 cars allowed to park at one time. Wait in line, your turn, if there's already 5 cars here. And there was a police officer telling me to stop and wait, which was kind of nice because I got to talk with him for a little bit. But then when a parking spot cleared and I parked the bike and trailer, it was like so far. It felt so far from the trash and compost and all these things. And, well, be careful what you wish for, because I remember last week, at the end of the week, I was like, whoa, I've been doing a lot of biking lately, doing Pedal People 5 days a week. My sciatica's hurting, my sciatica's starting to hurt a little bit. I need to do something besides bike. Like, I need to walk. I need to walk some. I got to walk for my physical health. So there I was today, walking back and forth across that parking lot, carrying 30 or 40 pounds or 50 pounds of compost or whatever back and forth and back and forth. But I got my walking in. Well, we bike-powered trash haulers will get a little better solution to this situation soon. I realize there's hardships out there. This is not much of a hardship, but anyway, you know, you got to complain about what you got to complain about, right? All right, what else do I have stories for today? Oh, I had my first corona nightmare this past week. Yeah, I dreamed that I was in the Salvation Army with my friend Stephen Bosco, who volunteers for Bikes Not Bombs, and he's been helping me with the Trinidad Bicycle Osmosis Project. So I dreamed we were in the Salvation Army thrift store looking for bikes. And when we first walked in, one of the store employees said to me, he said, "You can look, but don't touch, because we don't want any virus to be spread." And anyway, so then I was wandering down the aisles, and I saw this shelf, and it had two bicycle taillights on it. And I had been looking for a taillight, so I picked one up, and I turned it over, and I looked at it, and then I set it down, and then I picked the next one up, trying to see if I wanted it. And then I heard the store employee say, "Oh, you touch them. That's a $1 fine for each thing you touched. You owe us $2 now." And I turned around and hid my face and cried, and I woke up crying because I felt, for one, ashamed that I couldn't follow a simple rule. And then I felt frustrated that so many rules. So that was my dream. That was just a dream. But then in real life, a couple of days ago, my housemates were going to the co-op, to River Valley Co-op, to do some grocery shopping. And I don't usually go inside stores really much, except for maybe Deals and Steals. And I was like, I'll go with you. I'm curious just to see, you know, what it's like. And so I biked there halfway with them, but they had to stop. So I just kept on going by myself. And when I got to the co-op and I parked my bike, and I walked in the first set of doors that opened, and when I walked in, I saw on the left there was this like sink set up, and it piqued my curiosity, but I kept on walking in. And then when I went through the second set of doors, you know, one-way doors, they close behind you, I thought, oh, that's for people to wash their hands when they come into the store, obviously. Oh, well, it's a one-way door. I can't get back there now. Well, I mean, I guess I could have, because other people were probably coming in. Anyway, so then I went in the store. And then I was like, okay, I just want to check out the bulk food section. And there was people everywhere. This was a Sunday. The stores, like, there were so many people in there, it seemed like. And I live most of my life outside, so I felt a little bit like a deer in the spotlights or something, the headlights. Anyway, but then I went to the bulk food section, and there was a sign that said, "Wear gloves to handle the bulk food." And it said, "No, you can't bring your own bags." And then I was like, I hadn't washed my hands. I didn't want to touch anything. And then my nose started to run. And then I ran out of there. And I went back on my bike and went back outside. Anyway, so yes, you are listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, and I'm going to play this little Fred Small song called "The Hug."
I want a hug when we say hello. I want a hug when it's time to go. I want a hug, 'cause I want you to know I'm awfully fond of you. I want a hug. What a wonderful feeling. I want a hug to feel you squeezing. I want a hug. It certainly seems like the natural thing to do. But Dan Murrow is a mighty friendly man. He's big and round like a bear. He hugs his friends and his friends hug him anytime, anywhere. His patients would come for therapy to drive their blues away. And sooner or later they'd feel a lot better, 'cause this is what he'd say. I want a hug when we say hello. I want a hug when it's time to go. I want a hug, 'cause I want you to know I'm awfully fond of you. I want a hug. What a wonderful feeling.
I want a hug.
To feel you squeezing.
I want a hug.
It certainly seems like the natural thing to do. But when the head of the hospital heard about it, he got all annoyed. 'Cause hugging is sexual sublimation, according to Dr. Freud. You can beat them down, you can hide them away, you can keep them quiet with drugs. You can strap them and zap them with electroshock, but you better not give them a hug. So the boss says, Dan, clean out your desk. Your conduct is lax and lewd. Any deviation from standard medical practice can get us sued. Now Dan don't feel too bad for himself. He's really kind of proud. But he's sorry for the people who are locked away where hugging ain't allowed.
I want a hug.
What a wonderful feeling.
I want a hug.
To feel you squeezing.
I want a hug. It certainly seems like the natural thing to do.
I didn't visit Jacob Marley in the hospital, Carol. He was HIV positive.
Some of your university students are HIV positive.
I suppose. It's not my business.
But you're the dean, Scrooge. Where do they go to talk?
Not to me. Don't look at me that way, Spirit. Like most straight people, I'm nervous about catching AIDS. Although, I'm not afraid of dying.
Are you afraid of living?
Oh, actually, the song that I meant to play after talking about going in the grocery store and feeling too close to people was a Bonnie Raitt song, but I'll play that in just a minute. One other thing I was thinking of, and a little brief encounter from the week, is so I was biking up the bike path with my trash trailer and load, and I stopped to eat an apple. And I was eating an apple, and then I looked behind me and saw a couple of elderly neighbors of mine that were walking up, and I wanted to say hi to them, so I tried to swallow quick so I could turn around and say hi, but instead I choked on my apple, and I coughed in a very expulsory kind of way off to the side, and of course my neighbors jumped back like 10 feet, and I was like, it's okay, I'm only choking, I don't have corona. All right, this is the line I wanted to play from another line that comes to mind given the situation of the 6 feet, whatever. Yeah, I think this is a great time to flirt with people that you don't really want to do anything with besides flirt. All right, so I'm going to go to a recorded interview that I have with, let's see, who am I going to play here? This is Aya, who lives at, I don't know if I should say where she lives, but I know her from the bike lab.
My name is Aya Mares, and I live in so-called Western Massachusetts, in so-called Northampton.
Are you thinking about other names for the area?
Yeah. I often think of the name Nunatuck, which I believe is a Pocumtuck word that means the meeting of many rivers when I think about living here.
So you've been here for... How long have you been here?
I moved here in September of this past year.
You've been working at Small Oven Bakery in East Hampton until when?
Until 2 weeks ago, when we were told that we could no longer work there because of the safety concerns surrounding this virus that's spreading around. So I stopped my work there and found myself entering a very different pace. And in the course of the following week, I have gathered up all of my scraps that I've been collecting over the years, a lot of scrap cloth and old garments that I found at the transfer station on the island I used to live on, off the coast of Maine. And my room has kind of exploded with these scraps that I'm now reassembling into garments.
Into garments. Yeah. For any particular purpose? like for clothes? I'm not going to say anything any stupider than I already have.
Okay, so the way I'm, I do sometimes struggle to justify, putting so much time, because sometimes it takes a lot of time to mend things or reassemble or even make new garments altogether for myself. But it is something I've always liked to do since I was little, was to costume. And I'm trying to think of, or invite that costuming into my life. And it means a lot to me to work with material that is already present in the world and reassemble that in my expression. And just today, I began experimenting with, so can I be sewing and putting these things together and thinking of myself and how I want to look in the world while also doing some pretty deep studying into prison abolition, which is something I've been curious about a long time, but I haven't listened to many conversations or done a lot of reading yet. But I found a very good podcast called Beyond Prisons. So I'm trying to pair this insular time of self-expression with this more vaster and beautiful organization around taking down walls. So, yeah.
Back to the garments and costuming. It reminds me, the other day I saw a kid on the bike path out with the family who had, it looked like a stocking over their head, but like a superhero sort of stocking with these like eyeball things in it. I don't know, super snake man or snake woman or something. I don't know. But I was like, oh, is that a Corona superhero mask?
I know. It's kind of like, I get curious about what, you know, if for people who do have to stay inside right now or find themselves with a lot of time where they would usually be working, like what might surface up in terms of how you express yourself or even how you want to be in the world. But yeah, I would love to see more kids and adults in costume to disrupt the norm of,
So you also were working at the winter market selling for Red Fire Farm until, when did that job end?
That job ended about 2 weeks ago as well. That was the last market. But the farm has allowed us to keep going for the seconds that they keep in the cooler there. So that's been good because that's been my source of produce for as long as I've lived here. The last market that I worked was in Springfield, and it was bizarre because I think there's usually many people there, and then it was just ghostly because there weren't many people there, and it was a different kind of feeling with the people who showed up a little bit. It felt like the end of something.
When would that market have ended anyway? Is it seasonal or all year round?
Well, the indoor markets are seasonal. They end on April 18th. But then the next week they open up outside. So, yeah.
So do you know what's happening with the produce that Red Fire would have been selling? Are there other distribution networks, or what do you know?
Yeah, I do know that people are ordering online and that there are still workers that are working for the farm because it is considered essential. So they're doing deliveries around Western Massachusetts. But I'm not sure beyond that. I think that some farms, well, I know that some farms are also delivering to food pantries and some of the survival centers, but I don't know if Red Fire Farm is one of them. Yeah. I initially, before it became clear that it's not a good idea to gather large groups of people in houses, I wanted to start gathering and making fermented foods together. But so far it's just been me making sauerkraut. So, yeah.
What else do you have time for in your life now that you didn't before?
Well, I have time for reading. Okay, so I'm reading a book called The Spell of the Sensuous, and it's exploring how written language, English language in particular, and writing may have kind of caused this fissure in our minds that somehow separates us from language, from the language of the natural world. And the tragic nature of that, because it's kind of, it talks about how, you know, animal tracks may have been the first ways that a lot of our ancestors were reading, which is so woven into the natural landscape. But how could we get to a point with certain languages like English, where it's not always guaranteed that our words that we're speaking or writing are in this kind of flow with the natural world. Like wondering about environmental degradation, how could it happen?
Yeah, because we're really illiterate on that, it seems.
Yeah. And we make these sounds that enter the air, and we do exist with the earth all the time, but how could we be so illiterate in the like language of trees and air and water?
I feel like even though I spend most of my days outside, I really don't know how to read the landscape. I mean, I feel like very little. Yeah, I feel like I feel illiterate on that personally, despite being in it.
Yeah, me too. And I can appreciate it, but it's even with reading this book, I've kind of slowed myself down in ways and noticed how I wasn't letting in the landscape as much as I could, or like the really letting in the sounds of the birds, or just, yeah, I have like a sitting practice in the morning, and I always do that inside, but lately I've been doing it outside because that just, I can't, yeah, the walls of the room seem so much louder now that I've started reading this book and let myself feel into things I was feeling already.
Yeah,
so that's one thing I've had more time for.
When you talk about going outside, I'm thinking about how the skies are quieter, the streets are quieter.
Yesterday, which was Saturday, I was riding my bike home from getting my last paycheck, and it was incredible to just, all I could hear riding along the edge of downtown Northampton were just the birds. So yeah, I did delight in that.
How is this affecting you economically? Are you like stressed about finances and things like that?
Yeah, So, I am kind of slow. I have the privilege to, like, more slowly wrap my head around it. I don't have the acute urgency yet. But I'm starting to realize that, yeah, that's a real possibility. So, I have this cushioning of, like, my rent isn't very high because I've found this, like, generous person with a good room that I can feel safe and not stress about it. And, yeah, I have, like, various things like that that keep me, like, safe, but I also really don't know what the future will be. Mm. And, yeah, it makes me think a lot about, like, I don't really, I would like to, I kind of would love to just invent a job, because I don't want to keep working in the way that I have been working. That this has kind of brought to mind a lot of questioning that I do, but then I get exhausted by if I'm on a work schedule and I can't be questioning it all the time. Mm-hmm. I've done that before and it's really exhausting. So now I'm in a moment where I'm questioning again, like, what do I do for work, and why do I work for money? I mean, why don't I do other things for work that I find more fulfilling? Mm-hmm. But in terms of financial security and the practicalities like that, I guess I'm trying to start to think on my feet about that. And I've never filed for unemployment before, but that it looks like I might have to do that. And but also trying to think of creative ways to find support and also support other people. The like mutual aid projects around here have been really exciting, and I'm trying to trust in that more, because I feel there are a lot of resources around here that I feel, if we can kind of culturally shift, that a lot of us can be okay. Mm. But yeah, to find that webbing and realize that webbing is important.
Are there any of the mutual aid projects in particular that you're excited about?
Yeah, I, let's see. I've been kind of hopping around the different ones. I was very pleased about the plant medicine and gardening one, because it seemed there was a lot of like sharing of what people know about gardens and sharing of mm-hmm. resources. Also meals, like finding ways to, like, as restaurants shut down and other places like farms having less business, having that excess food go to the places it needs to go, and people organizing around that. And also, this is how I've more recently become more involved in actions about releasing incarcerated folks on the that's been on one of these channels on the Slack app called Actions and Alerts. And yeah, just learning a lot from defense attorneys like Rachel Weber, and about what needs to be done right now by people like me who aren't attorneys and are kind of beginning with learning about how to become more engaged, but just simply making phone calls or writing emails and letters. So I'm trying to learn more about that each day. And then I'm hoping to learn about how to be of use to families who are trying to get in touch with their loved ones who are incarcerated. So these are little, not little, very vast projects that are going on.
Is there anybody you're writing now? Anything you're advocating for now?
Yeah, I'm about to write to the governor. Last week I was writing to lots of sheriffs across the state about to stand in solidarity with a petition for emergency relief of the incarcerated.
Release.
I believe it's relief in that one, but release would be ideal. Yeah. And so, that's what I was writing about last week, and I would anticipate that I'll be writing more, sending out letters this week or doing phone calls.
Last week's letters didn't do it.
Yeah,
dang.
I know.
Well, gosh, well, thank you.
Yeah. So since our conversation yesterday, I contacted my old employers at Red Fire Farm asking if anyone is doing food redistribution work with the seconds that are piling up there. And they answered that one food bank is, but it doesn't sound like they're linked to the projects going on in Northampton, like Northampton Prepared Meals, that's gearing up to become vaster now that the survival center is closed down. So there's going to be a meeting online tomorrow night with the prepared foods people, and I'll be hopefully able to be the link person between them and Red Fire Farm.
Tomorrow night being Tuesday night, the 31st.
Yes, at 6 p.m. via Zoom.
Yeah, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. That was Aya. Not sure her last name. Sorry, Aya. But works at Red Fire, or used to work at Red Fire Farm and also a small oven bakery.
From a distance, the world looks blue and green, and the snow-capped mountains white. From a distance, the ocean meets the stream, and the eagle takes to flight. From a distance, it's the voice of hope, it's the voice of peace, it's the voice of every man. From a distance, we all have enough, and no one is in need. There are no guns, no bombs, and no disease, no hungry mouths to feed. From a distance, we are instruments marching in a common plan, playing songs. They're the song of every man. God is watching us. God is watching us. God is watching us from a distance. Even though we are at war.
It's the heart of every man. It's the hope of hopes. It's the love of loves. This is the song of every man. And God is watching us. God is watching.
And that was Bette Midler. No, wait, stop there. That was Bette Midler. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Coming up more on Out There, I have a little interview with Alex Jarrett and a brief interview with James Lowenthal. And I'm looking for something else, but let me play this little clip from Paige Bridgens first.
Paige, can you tell me about the raspberries?
Yeah, so I work at a farm, and the other day, my housemate who works with me there, she and I thinned the raspberries, which this is something that needs to happen every year. And so as we pulled them out, we did it carefully so that we could really acquire a lot of raspberries to then give away. So we put them in buckets and brought them home. And then I posted them on this new Ward 3 Mutual Aid Google group. And so far, I think it's like 7 or 8 people who've come and gotten raspberries. Some said that they'd been hoping to get started with some raspberries. Other people said, I've never gardened, but I love the idea. What do I do? And so they're getting started with some raspberries, a little raspberry patch here and there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
If people want more, can they get more?
Yes. And next week we'll be doing a whole other section of raspberries. So there will be even more.
Are they red, black, golden? What are they?
These are red raspberries. The ones that we just harvested are Lauren, Boyne, Polana, and Polka. Maybe there's one other variety, but they are all ever-bearing, and they're all mixed up, both in the rows and in, you know, they have the same regimen. You know, if you want to have these raspberries produced throughout the summer, you just cut them to 4 feet high. If you want the heavy crop in the fall, you cut them to the ground, like right about now. And either way, they're absolutely delicious. They're plump, moist red raspberries.
Thanks, Paige.
Yes, thanks for those raspberry tips, Paige Bridgens. I'm going to continue the edible theme and just mention a few things that are popping up now. It's springtime and some edibles. Jerusalem artichokes. Those are the roots. They're related to the sunflower, but those need some digging. Those are more domesticated than really wild. But wild things around that are edible that are popping up. Japanese knotweed, garlic mustard, fiddleheads soon, I think. Dandelion greens, chickweed, clover, daylily shoots, hosta shoots, violets, nettles, linden leaves will be coming. The linden, like all parts of the linden tree, are edible. And the leaves, the flowers, the little leaf buds are really nice. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I am your host, Ruthie Woodring. Yesterday, my friend Moss sent me a little update. I'm just going to read some of this about from the, this is a post from the Unist Stoughton camp in Canada from, I think it's from yesterday. say, as Canadians are being told to stay home to stop the spread of COVID-19, Coastal GasLink continues work as usual on our territories. The Canadian police continue to be flown in from across the province to escort pipeline workers onto our unceded lands. Pipelines are being stockpiled, and the pipeline right-of-way is being cleared on Unistoten, Gidimitin, and Lixtamisiu territories. BC has shut down large gatherings and declared a state of emergency, but Coastal GasLink continues bringing in large numbers of workers onto our territory. Our Wet Sweatin home sites and healing center are on lockdown. Our clan meetings to discuss our rights and title with our communities have all been postponed. Meanwhile, we face a steady stream of transient workers and Canadian police who put our people and communities, and especially our elders, at risk. Our elders are keepers of cultural knowledge and language. Indigenous communities are already at increased risk from this pandemic due to a lack of adequate health care and housing infrastructure. CGL, the Coastal GasLink, and the police actions are compromising our health and safety. Anyway, that's a little update from the Unistoten camp. Pipeline issues. People are fighting the good fight against many of those all over the country, world, and many places. So next on out there, oh yeah, let's hear from James Lowenthal. I was doing a food co-op order delivery to him on Crescent Street here in Northampton yesterday, and we talked, him on his porch and me standing back. You know, I need one of those selfie sticks for my recorder. Only it's like a Yui stick or something. I don't know what to call it.
What I asked was, next warm, sunny day, are you ready to set up a little table outside your house? And we'll each do the same, and we'll have cocktail hour. And
I think I'd rather do that than Zoom. I think if we elevate a line, we can do the tin can.
Oh, yeah.
We can do that.
Yeah, good. Okay. See you later.
So, James, what are some of the ways, some way you and your neighborhood are dealing with this separation situation?
Well, here we are all under quarantine and yet seeing each other every day and saying hello and chatting from, a safe 6 feet away. And somebody had the great idea that we have had cocktail hours in the past and we're going to try that again. But, everybody will have to stay in front of their own house and set up a couple of tables and chairs, and we'll talk to each other across the street. And you might be able to talk to like three households at a time. It could zigzag up and down the street. And of course, the cocktail of choice will be the Quarantini.
How do you like the quiet streets?
Oh my God. I think that if there's a silver lining to coronavirus, it's that it's helping the climate. Yeah, there's just a dramatic reduction in pollution and traffic all around the world, and it's been written about and measured, and you can see it with your own eyes, and you can hear the birds better and breathe the air better.
Yeah, not just land, but sky and sea, too.
Well, unfortunately, I have not noticed any darkening in the skies. I think all the lights are still on all night long, uselessly, even though nobody's out. Everybody's locked up in the house, but got to keep those lights on.
Well, actually, with the airplanes and stuff.
Oh, the airplanes, I see. No, plenty. I've noticed a lot of airplanes. I was out Friday night. I went to the Hadley Dyke. It was a beautiful, spectacular, crystal clear night. And the crescent moon and Venus were just shining brilliantly in the west. So I put my cameras and my tripods on my bike, and I rode out that rail trail to the Hadley Dyke. And I set up there and did some time-lapse nighttime photography of the moon and Venus setting and Orion moving across, and bingo, first shot ruined by airplane, the second shot, another airplane, third shot, satellites moving across the skies from Starlink. So the time lapse, it just has the usual air traffic. But it was still a spectacular night, and I was very happy to be out there listening to muskrats and great horned owls.
What's a muskrat sound like? All right. Anything else? I felt like the first week of this stuff, I was like, yeah, motorists will give me 6 feet when they pass now. And then the second week I was like, gosh, there aren't any motorists. And the third week I was like, oh shoot, I think I'm going to get run over by an Amazon delivery truck. And this week I was riding up the bike path trying to make a left turn onto Hatfield Street with the trailer and had to wait for like 10 minutes for traffic to stop. All the pedestrians and cyclists and on and on.
Yeah, they could be out on the roads.
Right. That's another thing that I was coming down from like Big Y the other day over the weekend, and I could have taken Industrial Drive or King Street. Of course, I took Industrial Drive because it's a less traffic street. And then I was on Industrial Drive, and I was like, wait, King Street would have been shorter. Why didn't I think of King Street? Right. Oh, because I never think of King Street when I have a better option because of the traffic. But I could have taken King Street, and it'd been all mine.
Mel and I went for a run this morning, and we took the rail trail across King Street, and we didn't even have to press the button.
Yeah. That button's going to get rusty because I'm just whipping across there too and not even pressing it. I fear the backlash, though. The backlash against nature.
Me too.
Yeah. Yes, me too. People are going to want to make up for lost time and lost money.
Go driving.
That was James Lowenthal, a cyclist and astronomist at Smith College, and coordinator of Northampton City Lights, a citizen group working to decrease light pollution in Northampton. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Madness Radio comes up at 4 o'clock. You can listen to Valley Free Radio streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. And what next? All right, so I got an interview with Alex Jarrett, 5th Ward City Councilor. And as of January 2020, he's also my housemate and co-founder of Pedal People and my co-worker. All right, Alex. Yeah, what is going on with your constituents in Ward 5? Or what are people concerned about? Or what kind of information are you trying to get out?
There's so much.
So much, yeah.
And it changes so fast.
Yeah. You had told me last week there's a shelter opening up at the high school. Is that open?
I have not heard confirmation that's opened yet. But yeah, the city's opening a 70-cot shelter in the gymnasium of Northampton High School. And they are looking for volunteers for that, for a 2-week commitment. I'm a little unclear. I think it's 8-hour shifts. And I'm not sure how often.
Overnight shift.
That's one of them. I mean, 24 hours.
Yeah. Okay.
I've heard that they're implementing lots of control measures to make sure people are far enough apart and have all the things they need to keep sanitized. And,
yeah.
It's great that's moving.
Yeah. I was just talking yesterday, I think, with someone that stopped by who said he had just gotten out of jail, Hampshire County, the mm-hmm. day before, and mm-hmm. didn't really have housing and was just staying with a friend at Meadowbrook. But there's a lot of people who need a place to stay.
Yeah.
A place that's not tight quarters.
Right. I mean, that's essential. Both, obviously, people need a place to stay, but also we need to make sure that people can keep their distance so we're not just creating more spread of COVID.
Yeah.
Another issue, not really one the council was probably going to take up, although we could do some sort of resolution, but it has to do with the jails and the crowded situations there. There was an interesting editorial in the Gazette about sort of the math of the jail, and there's 200 people in the jail. This is according to this editorial, 30 of those are likely to need to go to the hospital, just based on, if they all get infected, which you would kind of assume that it would be difficult for them not to if they're kept in the typical level of close confinement and but not just confinement, but like, you know, they're right next to each other. And then that 15 of those would need to be in intensive care. And that's about what Cooley Dickinson can do. Mm-hmm. So if that happens, and that happens quickly, that would just use up all of the resources of Cooley Dickinson's intensive care unit. I mean, if that math was correct, I haven't verified it. So that's a big argument for releasing people who it's safe to release into the community.
You also went to a food security meeting this past week.
Yeah, so you know, that's another moving target, in that the survival center had to close because most of their staff had to quarantine themselves. But there are other, like the Mana Soup Kitchen, Cathedral in the Night. I think there's another. They're in need of volunteers to make sure that those programs keep running. One of the things I need to do in the next couple days as I put out my April newsletter is just try to find the most up-to-date information on that. And I'll probably actually link to, not directly to the organizations, but to people who are doing the work of keeping things up to date, you know, because it everything changes so fast. You need someone who's really working on making sure they have the most up-to-date information about what's needed and where resources are.
Yeah. Have your constituents, what kind of concerns or questions have they been, has anyone brought things to you?
Yeah. The question on taxes. So first, can, you know, the state and federal government have delayed the due dates for taxes to June 15th instead of April 15th? And so can we do a similar thing for city taxes? Can we delay the due dates for, you know, the property tax, second quarter or fourth quarter property tax? And the answer is, we can't do that on our own. We need the state to give us permission to do that. So there is legislation moving through the state legislature to allow that. And I don't know how soon that will happen, but if it happens quickly, then we can take a vote on delaying that. There's also been talk about delaying the implementation of the Proposition 2.5 override, so not increasing the taxes for some, you know, at least until the emergency is over. That, I don't know. You know, the budget, we'll be getting into the budget very soon in the council. It's not on this week's agenda, so... But once that happens, I mean, effectively the city council can choose to cut things. So we could cut things enough so that the taxes would be lowered for that period. Mm-hmm. That's my understanding. But it would be great to have a good conversation about the implications of that and what, you know, how has this affected the city's budget? What kind of reimbursements are we going to get from the federal government for the expenses we're incurring? There's a lot of questions.
Yeah. One more question. How is the health of city, our elected city officials? The mayor sent out a press release saying that he had tested positive. Do you know how he's doing?
I don't know how he's doing. I think he's still in communication with people, so that's good. The city council president hasn't taken over as acting mayor, so he must still be. We debated this a few weeks ago because we're revising the city's charter, and there was this question of, I think it was incapacitated. You know, if the mayor is incapacitated, then we can vote to remove him, actually. But that has to be some legal threshold. Mm-hmm. But there's also, if it's temporary, then it's there's the acting mayor, which would be the city council president, Gina Louise Shera. So, hopefully that won't happen.
Yeah.
City Councilor Jim Nash is doing much better. He was really out with what was likely COVID-19, according to his doctor, but he never got tested. But he's doing much better, but it was several weeks.
All right, anything else?
Oh, there's lots. I mean, there's a lot of zoning changes that we're going to be debating. We debated last meeting. So there's a lot of kind of ordinary city business that's still happening, and so it's important for us to hear. A lot of those zoning changes, people did have plenty of opportunity to weigh in on. There was a hearing, Legislative Matters.
And that's it for the interview with Alex Jarrett, 5th Ward City Councilor here in Florence, the Florence part of Northampton. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP 103.3 FM in Northampton. Thanks for listening. This week, Out There airs every Tuesday for the time being at 3 o'clock from 3 until 4. Followed by Madness Radio up at 4. All right. Enjoy your day. And do good.